Here we are. Just like always, I always like coming up to Loon Lake. Here it has, I guess maybe not just the lake, but because it's Sesshin, it's a timeless, ancient feeling. We don't exactly do Sesshin. We come to Sesshin to throw ourselves away, which is a tremendous relief. And then once we throw ourselves away, we can let Sesshin do us. And I realize that we might have to slog through a certain amount of ourselves first, to finally get to where we're so worn out that we can't but throw ourselves away. And maybe at the beginning, or maybe throughout the whole time, we don't really feel like we want to throw ourselves away. But sooner or later, we will. Sesshin will effect that in us. And then once we throw ourselves away, it's great. We could be anyone. We are anyone and everyone, and we could be anywhere, and it could be any time, and it would always be just the same moment of Sesshin. So I probably always say this, but every time I arrive at Loon Lake at Sesshin, it actually feels to me as if I never left, and that no time passed between the last day of the last Sesshin and the first day of this Sesshin. It really feels that way to me. It feels like all the intervening time is some kind of a dream, gone in a flash, as if it never really happened. Maybe I'm just weird, but it feels that way to me. You know, it really does. Nothing happens. Nothing happens. Here we are. Always. Ourself. Anybody. Everybody. Somehow, in this ancient, austere form, we find a way to illuminate our lives, to open them up and discover what space and time and identity actually are. I guess I never mentioned this up here, but every year when I come to Loon Lake to join you for the end of your practice period, here in Mountain Rain, I'm always also in the midst of practice period in our Bay Area Everyday Zen group. And this year, besides your practice period going on and ours in the Everyday Zen group in the Bay Area, Chris Fortin, who has a group in Sebastopol, the Lotus Sangha, she was also in practice period, and also at the same time my wife Kathy was leading a short practice period, which is now over, at the Upaya Zen Center in Santa Fe. So we had a lot of, our Everyday Zen family was very busy practicing this fall. In Santa Fe, Kathy's theme was the Platform Sutra, which she studied very closely. We had an interesting theme in the Bay Area. Our theme was the question, what is Buddhist enlightenment? That was the theme of our practice period. And there's a book by that title written by Dale Wright, who's a wonderful contemporary Buddhist scholar and thinker. So we read that book. And it was pretty interesting to think about that. You know, what exactly is Buddhist enlightenment? What do we think we're trying to do here? So that's what we have been spending our time studying. And our practice period ends with a retreat as soon as I come home. And I know that here the theme of the practice period has been living in samsara, suffering and resilience. And I'm sure that you have been reflecting on the fact that we are living in times of great suffering. The world is getting every day a little more crowded, a little more confusing, and a little warmer. And certainly we as a collective family of human beings could start to wonder, so where exactly are we going here? What exactly are we doing here, we poor human beings who have been so innocent and so arrogant for so long? And I like to imagine, when I think of my friends up here in Canada, that it's not as bad here, I hope, as it is south of the border, where we have shootings and killings almost every day. Lots of people, you can any day open the newspaper and not be that surprised that 5, 10 people were shot today somewhere in a school or a supermarket or a dance hall or church or synagogue. And we have such immense bitterness in our politics. And in California, as I flew away yesterday and walked around the day before yesterday, all the air in the Bay Area was full of smoke. Your eyes were watering. It was hard to breathe because we have the worst wildfires in the history of the state, north and south. 25 people killed, 200,000 people evacuated. Terrible. Every year now, most of the year round, fires. So yes, it's plenty to suffer over. So the theme of samsara and suffering and learning how to live with some ease in the middle of suffering is a really important thing to study always. But let's not think that it's only in our days that we have suffering. There's always been a tremendous amount of suffering, possibly worse in the past for more people. And this theme of suffering is the Buddha's original theme. I'm sure you have already discussed that Buddha's path begins with the truth of suffering. As a young man, the Buddha noticed the suffering of others around him. And it shocked him. It upset him to realize that suffering is not unusual or preventable. That suffering is the most normal and ordinary thing in the world. And it is completely unescapable. This was a great shock to Buddha as a young man. And it completely threw his life upside down and inside out. And he left everything and went forth into a life of spiritual practice. Until he finally came to understand that suffering is the path, and that to truly understand suffering and embrace it with love is actually the whole of the spiritual life. So, as people trying to follow the Buddha's path, we too understand it like this. But in order to really understand it like this, we have to revolutionize not only our basic point of view, not only our sense of identity, but also our whole way of life, just like the Buddha. The Eightfold Path of Right View, Right Intention, Right Speech, Right Action, Right Livelihood, Right Effort, Right Mindfulness, Right Meditation, which when we practice those things, it gives rise to right view, which gives rise to right intention, which gives rise to right speech, action, and so on and on. This word right here in the Eightfold Path means in alignment, in accord with how things actually go. These eight members of the path describe a life we will lead not only once in a while when we go to the Zendo or when we think about our practice, but every moment of every single day. So what the Buddha called for was a radical transformation on all levels of how we feel and live our lives. And these things don't happen by willing them to happen, by believing that they will happen, by hoping that they will happen. Will, belief, hope, these things are not irrelevant, they are involved, but the revolution in our way of life has to be really thorough if it's really going to be able to penetrate this natural and long-standing habit that we all have of avoiding and mistaking suffering. It has to pervade our whole body. It has to pervade our breath, our emotions, our thinking. And this is not something we can do or accomplish the way we've done and accomplished other things in our life. And that's why we come to Sesshin. Sesshin really, really helps us to transform in ways we can't exactly understand, but that we come to appreciate over time. So I was thinking that this morning I'd like to read with you a fascicle of Dogen that is, I hope, germane to all these things that I've been saying. I know a lot of you have, like me, studied Dogen over the years. And lately, I've been coming to appreciate just how different Dogen's teaching actually is. I think in the beginning, you know, when the whole of the teaching was not so familiar to us, we couldn't tell exactly how different Dogen was, but now I'm really getting it. Dogen is quite different. Very different, and also at the same time, very, very familiar. And how much simple sense Dogen's teaching makes, even though at first when you read it, it seems pretty abstruse. When you get the hang of it, you realize how much simple sense it makes for our lives. So Dogen is not your average Zen teacher, it seems. And his way of practice and understanding is really different from the way that most people think about Zen and how Zen teaching goes. And Dogen also says this himself, because one of the themes of Dogen's work is his bitter complaining about other Zen teachers who he gets mad at them, you know, for getting it wrong. So maybe we could say, like, Dogen Zen is not exactly Zen Buddhism. It's sort of some other thing. And Dogen is telling us over and over and over again, don't think that Zen is some kind of special something that we could penetrate or understand or not penetrate and not understand. Don't think that Zen practice is an effort that we're making to realize something or get rid of something. It's far beyond all of those things, he says. The magic of Dogen Zen, and you know, Dogen didn't think that he was doing Zen. He really didn't. He sincerely thought that he was just doing Buddhism. He thought that the way that he was understanding and practicing was simply the path of the Buddha. The magic of Dogen Zen is that it will simply situate us in our lives as they truly are. It won't give us a thing that we don't already have. It will just bring us to our lives as they really, really are. Awesome and uncanny. He is encouraging us to just live beyond our notions and our resistances and relax and be awesome human beings together. That's really, I think, what Dogen is all about. And so I want to read one of his texts that I've been thinking about lately, which is called Zenki, Undivided Activity. So, as is often the case with Dogen texts, the title already includes a lot of what he's going to say in the body of the text. Zenki, the first character, Zen, is not the same Zen as Zen Buddhism. It's a different character. It means total or complete or whole. So this is maybe the exact opposite of the way we experience life, because our whole apparatus as a human being with sense organs and so on that give us access to the world is by its nature partial, torn, somehow inherently lacking in fullness, somehow inherently unsatisfactory. We don't live whole, complete. We don't feel whole, complete. There's a certain kind of built-in lack built into the organism. And that was exactly how the Buddha originally defined dukkha. He said, the nature of conditioned existence is dukkha, which means unsatisfactoriness, partialness, something is torn. Something is incomplete. Something isn't yet fully embracing. And Zenki is the opposite of that. Maybe Zenki is the partialness, the suffering, the incompleteness, the unsatisfactoriness seen through awakened eyes as itself actually already complete and full and beautiful, instead of mistaken or tragic. But anyway, I don't want to give away the text. That's just the title, the first character of the title. The second character of the title is Ki, which has a lot of meanings. It means something like dynamic or functioning, dynamic working, the pivot point of movement and flux. So Kaz Ta-Nehisi translates Zen Ki, Zen and Ki together, as undivided activity. It's been translated also as total dynamic functioning or complete activity. Thomas Cleary translates it as the whole works, which is a pretty good pun on a common English idiom. And I think Dogen often did this too. He would use common Japanese idioms as puns in this way. I doubt that the pun works in medieval Japanese the way it works in English, but it's pretty good. The whole works. The totality of the workings of reality. The full and total movement of reality, which is nothing other than movement, flux, with no things in it, just flow. So Zenki is that flow, appreciated in its totality and experienced in its fullness and completeness. Wouldn't we like to feel our lives that way? So the text begins. First sentence says, "The great way of all Buddhas thoroughly practiced is emancipation and realization." Freedom and realization. So Dogen begins with a very broad brushstroke. He says that when you really appreciate the Buddha way and you really practice it completely, this is what it's all about. Two things. First, freedom, which is something you can feel in your life, and certainly you can feel the lack of it. Bound. All of a sudden, you're unbound. Constrained. Now you can move around. Your arms, your legs, your mind, your emotions. You don't have to second guess yourself. You don't have to doubt yourself. You can be free within the workings of your own life. So it means freedom. And it means realization, which means your freedom isn't just willful, selfish, or hopeful. It's completely real because it's based on a real understanding of what your life is and of what life is. Realization, the way Dogen thinks of it and the way it's understood in Buddha Dharma, doesn't exactly mean you realize something. It doesn't mean you realize truth, as if truth were a something that you could know, a something you could hold in mind and go around being smug about. In Buddha Dharma, realization has the opposite effect. It makes you profoundly humble, because you really realize that you don't know the truth. You realize that probably the truth is beyond you forever and beyond all of us forever. Probably the truth, you really respect the truth, and you probably know that it's more than your mind and heart are capable of receiving. So what then do you realize? You realize impermanence. In other words, you realize Zenki, the total dynamic working of your own life and all of life. And these are the same thing. Your life and all of life is the same. So this means that realization inevitably brings with it a profound sense of compassion. Because realization causes a total recalibration of your sense of who you are, changing you from me, I, to us. And I really hope that sometime during this week of session, each and every one of you will immediately, in a moment, right here on your cushion, or maybe in your walking or standing or gazing at the lake, maybe in the meal, maybe in working in the kitchen, that you will have a moment of recognizing that you are not just you, and you never were just you. You are Zenki, total dynamic working, localized for a moment. And that the whole of the past and the whole of the future and everywhere and everyone are literally and exactly immediately right here where you are. This is freedom and realization. So Dogen now goes on to say more about freedom and realization. Emancipation, he writes, means that in birth, in life, you are emancipated from life. And in death, you are emancipated from death. In emancipation means that in life you are emancipated from life, and in death you are emancipated from death. Thus there is detachment from birth and death, and penetration of birth and death. Such is the complete practice of the Great Way. There is letting go of birth and death, and vitalizing birth and death. Such is the thorough practice of the Great Way. So maybe we're a little surprised that right at the beginning here, Dogen brings in death. Couldn't we wait a while for death? And anyway, we're talking about freedom and realization and the Buddha path. Why does he have to throw death in? Right in the beginning here. Death, we understand death is something, but isn't that a different problem? Yes, at some point, probably we'll have to deal with that problem. But why here? Why at the center of what Dogen is telling us about Buddha Dharma? Well, it turns out that death is not a special problem because death is not, as we might have thought, this odd and unknowable thing that happens in a moment at the end of life, so we might as well forget about it until then. No. Death is actually, literally, really happening all the time because death is the magic ingredient of impermanence. And impermanence is this world, this life. Zenki means Things flash forth and flash away. Things appear and disappear. Our organism, our senses, produce the beautiful and painful illusion of the continuity of objects like you and me and the Zafu and the Zabutan and the building and the sky. But in fact, there is only the continuity itself without the objects. This continuity is immense and marvelous, and it manifests on each point, everywhere. Nothing, no thing comes and goes because everything is always coming and going. This is the magic, the miracle of Zenki. So death is really important. Death is a necessity, not only when we come to the time of so-called death. Death is dubious, you know, I think. What we think of as death. No, death is all the time. Death is time, literally. Time is death, death is time. So Dogen says that when things flash forth, we are free. Because things flash forth. And when things flash forth and flash away, also we are free. And we don't experience that freedom because usually we like it when things flash forth, and we like it to stay that way, and it doesn't. Things flash away, and we don't like that part. We're not free to let things flash forth and let things flash away. We're clinging. We're grasping. We're completely bamboozled by what we like and what we don't like. And of course, basically, it doesn't go the way we like it. It goes another way. Being bound is exactly being bound by our grasping and clinging. And being free is exactly no grasping and no clinging, which means we have to be free in living as well as in dying. We have to be fully happy with both, fully embracing, fully in accord with both. So he says, there's detachment from birth and death, which means literally no clinging, no clinging to birth and death, freedom. Freedom, peace, joy. It's a wonderful feeling. And it is a kind of detachment. To feel peaceful, there's no clinging. There's no sticky attachment. That's peace. Detached, but not removed, not distant, not unconcerned. Because as he says, on the one hand, we detach from birth and death, but on the other hand, we penetrate birth and death, which means that on the one hand, we are detached, and on the other hand, we are more involved, more embedded in birth and death than we ever were before. Because now we feel what birth and death truly is. Now, finally, we're willing to completely embrace birth and death without our usual list of requirements, but just willing to be awestruck by this ever-disappearing, ever-appearing illusion we call life, beyond our smallness. So, we let go of birth and death. We realize that our life is not that big a deal. It's not that big a deal, you know? It's hardly even really here. It comes in a minute, it's gone in a minute. Why are we so agitated about it all? We don't really need to worry about this little, brief, beautiful life. We're so worried about our life, about our world. We don't need to worry. We can let go of our life, throw it away. And that's how we vitalize our life. That's how we give life to our life. We stop living my life. And we start living life, local, right here, flowing through this brief person. That's really who we are. That's really who we always were, until we shrunk it down and made it so painfully small, like a shoe that's several sizes too tight. We're walking around with all kinds of bunions. We don't need to do that. We don't need to be so hypnotized, mesmerized, bamboozled by our fears and our hopes. We can just notice what's already going on and always has been. Okay, so let's then be a little honest and realistic about this, okay? Dogen, not necessarily, but I would like to be a little honest and realistic about this. It's not that easy, right? To be detached from our lives. It's easy to say, let go of your life, but try doing it. And you'll realize there's a lot of terror involved. When Dogen says, penetrate your life, vitalize your life, that part sounds good. But when he says, detach from your life, let go of your life, not so sure, we like that part. And not only don't we like it, I mean, it's more than we just don't like it. It seems absolutely impossible to do, right? I mean, it seems like, as animals, which we are, it's perfectly natural to us to protect and hold on to our lives. We didn't decide to do that. We just automatically do it because it's built into us. And that really is true. So then, could we say that Dogen is a hopeless religious idealist like all the other hopeless religious idealists with their head in the clouds, urging us to be and do what no human being can actually be or do? Is that it? No, I wouldn't say that myself. I think he's trying to remind us that just as, yes, true, we are animals with instincts that cannot be ignored or overridden, we also are Buddha animals with the potential for freedom and realization, which is just as much built into us as those animal instincts are. That's also indelibly a part of the human organism, the human heart. So it's possible to practice what Dogen is talking about here. But it is not necessarily easy. Probably, to be honest about it, it's the work of a lifetime. Probably, this is the human work. And probably, this is the source of the difficulty in Sesshin, and the source of the great wonder of Sesshin. In Sesshin, we will feel very strongly both these inherent human tendencies. We will feel some pain and some anguish, as we can feel almost palpably the walls of our human cage. And also, we will sometimes feel the joy and transcendence of release. Sesshin really helps us to feel these things on both sides of the equation with tremendous depth. So it's not easy, but also it's very joyful. So more Dogen here. He's saying more about realization. Realization is birth, life. Life is realization. At the time of realization, there is nothing but life, totally actualized, and nothing but death, totally actualized. So when we live according to the way Dogen is explaining here, we can completely appreciate everything that happens to us in our lives. Buddhadharma, and this is so fundamental to what Dogen is always saying, Buddhadharma is not an add-on to our lives. You know, Buddhism isn't this thing, like a tradition or a teaching or something like that, besides our lives. Buddhadharma is our lives. It is life, rightly lived and understood. I mean, the Buddha didn't invent this cool doctrine called impermanence, right? The Buddha didn't make this up, impermanence. Impermanence is not a Buddhist doctrine. It's a fact of life. It's maybe the one most salient fact of life. And when we fully appreciate it, we can appreciate this amazing human life, so full of joy and equally full of sorrow. And we can appreciate all of it. We can even appreciate the suffering and the trouble, even the trouble and the suffering that we bring upon ourselves. We can appreciate. As bodhisattvas, of course we care. Of course we grieve. And of course we are fully dedicated to making things better in whatever way we see to do it. And we apply tremendous energy toward that. But we are never discouraged, because we fully understand that things get better and things get worse and things get better and things get worse and things get better and things get worse and things just flash forth and flash away forever. So there's always some joy, Always some joy. And when it's time to live, we live, and we're delighted to live. And when it's time to die, we die. And that's a beautiful thing. A beautiful continuation. So in our Everyday Zen group in the Bay Area, we have a lot of deaths lately. We actually, this spring, I think, we did a Dharma seminar on death and dying. And in the middle of the Dharma seminar on death and dying, several of our Sangha members died. Can you believe it? I'm never doing that seminar again. Jack Kamisar came to the seminar, and at the end he said a few words about how beautiful it is and what a privilege it is to die and to be with someone in dying. And then he went home and died. He actually did, within a few days of that. And then about a year ago, in the previous year, my wife Kathy, very close to home, her mother and her brother died within 6 months of each other. So we have very much dying in our lives. And it happens every day on earth in the human family. We lose people we love every single day without exception, whether someone shoots them or a fire burns them up, or whether they're lucky and they live to a ripe old age. One way or the other, every day we lose them, and every day they appear. Whose baby did I see the other day? I could see this baby right now in my mind. Whose baby was it? Oh, my neighbor's grandson. Whose name is Enzo. Jesus, he's cute. You know? Really cute. You can't believe it. Why should little kids be cute? They're so little. They're grotesquely small, you know? Little hands. You'd think, we'd say, oh, what a weird-looking person. But no, little kids appear cute, right? Don't they? Why would that be? It's illogical. Something in us, right? Something in us. They're so beautiful. Great to be a grandparent. They're beautiful, but then somebody else does all the work. Unless you're married. So this is life, right? All of it is life. Joyful, surprising, so passionate, so noble, so tragic. To be free, to live this life, to realize the beauty of this life. That's Zenki. So I stopped there for today, but we'll go on. There's a little bit more to read. Thank you very much for being here. Please pay attention. Pay attention every single moment, okay? Just pay attention. Try to be there. Try to be there, even in the middle of your dreams. Try to be there. That's the magic. That's the secret. No matter what you're doing, be there. If you feel terrible and you're totally disgusted with the whole thing, which happens, be there with that. Be a disgusted, crabby Buddha. 100%. Okay? Just be there. And keep the schedule carefully. Show up all the time for you, for everybody. So, thanks for being here. Thanks for being willing to do Sesshin. Thanks especially to the leaders and all the workers in the Mountain Rain Sangha who I take it for granted. I come so I waltz in, you know what I mean? All I have to do is get on the airplane and pack a little suitcase, show up. So easy, you know? And I realize how everybody's been working like crazy for weeks in advance to make this happen. So I do appreciate that. Thank you, Mountain Rain Gang, for what you do to make this happen. So, okay. Good start. Let's keep going.